Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we present the final installment in our new series, Using AI to Create It in Audio Form for the First Time on These Airwaves, encompassing the full text of Matt Cale's great essay and booklet, Faith of the Future. We begin today with a look, in the light of the ultimate failure of the Christian West, at the worldview of the future. These are the words of Matt Cale. Listen.
The worldview of the future will differ radically from the Judeo-Christian outlook. It will proceed from a totally different perception of the human condition and its purpose. It will be based, in the first instance, upon a profound respect and reverence for nature, which it conceives as a timeless order without beginning or end, but undergoing constant change and cyclic renewal, and which in its ultimate configuration is consubstantial with the divine, which it treats as subject rather than object. It regards man as part of nature, and proposes to restore the natural laws to their rightful place in human affairs, thus reforging the sacred link between man and nature, a link which was shattered by Semitic ideology. At the same time, it declares that for the conscious Aryan there can be no separation from the divine, that his God is not in some other world but resides within the precincts of his own heart, and that a proper religious attitude is one of veneration rather than one of fear. Thus does it lift the burden of original sin and guilt from his shoulders and end his abasement before the Almighty, proclaiming his glorious nobility instead. It restores the essential wholeness of man, for in its view there can be no cleft between body and soul. It represents, finally, an affirmation, rather than a negation, of life, and teaches joyful heroism, defiant courage, and manly resolve in the face of inexorable destiny, even when it involves gloom and despair, adversity, and death. Thus does the new idea, by returning to traditional values of Aryan religiosity, free Aryan man from that inner tension which has characterized spiritual life in the West for the past millennium, and bring him into harmony with the laws of nature and his own being. In a word, the outlook of the future reinstates Aryan man to a sound, natural condition, once again allowing unhindered expression for his native spirituality, as well as freeing him for the accomplishment of a great mission. In so doing, it recalls the faith of our ancient forefathers, who lived in communion and rapport with nature and enjoyed a fully developed religious life, which established the moral and ethical standards of their society and set the spiritual tone of their destiny. Most importantly, by going back to the primal source of life itself, the new idea is able to reestablish the primacy of race as the sacred premise for all higher existence on this earth. By thus raising the concept of race to an inviolable religious principle, indeed, to a moral imperative, it is able to speak to the paramount issue of modern time, the supreme biological-environmental issue, namely, the survival of Aryan man as the most advanced form of life on this planet. Hence, not the salvation of a mere individual, but rather the salvation of an entire race is its vital concern. By contrast, any system of contemporary philosophical or religious thought which fails to address this fundamental question in an explicitly positive manner is irrelevant, meaningless, and useless, if not downright harmful, to the cause of our continued existence. And here it must be noted that the threat to our racial survival begins with spiritual causes. Consequently, it can only be overcome by a solution which is spiritual in character. It is not from a lack of political alternatives or intellectual strategies that we suffer, but rather a more fundamental lack of will, courage, determination, dedication, commitment, integrity, and overall morale. Not to mention a lack of basic understanding and insight and a sense of true common identity. Whatever external dangers pose themselves derive, in the final analysis, from this internal problem. Therefore, the question of racial survival must be seen as involving not only political and propagandistic activity, but must in the first place encompass a moral and spiritual mobilization. Without such a moral muster, all other efforts, however noble and valiant, must necessarily prove futile. The effects of decades and centuries of cultural decadence are simply too advanced and widespread to be overcome through political appeal alone. The proper function of politics, of course, is to take people, in the mass, as they are, and utilize them for a larger purpose. The spiritual condition of the Western masses is such, however, as to preclude any useful potential for revolutionary political activity at this time. Consequently, the first task of the contemporary movement must be to establish a firm spiritual moral base, a standard of absolute moral fixity, capable of attracting those alienated young idealists of our race who are searching for answers in a confused and despairing world, one which will influence their lives and transform them into dedicated partisans of the holiest of causes. It is just such a strong spiritual foundation which must underlie any effective political action in the future. There is an accompanying consideration. It must be recognized that the condition which prevails evolved over a long period of time and cannot be eliminated by instantaneous panacea, but only through a process of protracted struggle involving decades and generations. The integrity of such a struggle, however, can only be sustained by spiritual, i.e., religious, conviction and commitment, with the movement often depending solely on its moral resources for continuity and survival. Therefore, the development of those resources as a critical necessity must assume highest priority over every other consideration. If the new idea represented merely an instauration of traditional Aryan spiritual values and the natural outlook of pre-Christian times, along with an appeal for racial preservation, it certainly would possess relevance, meaning, and utility, yet it would remain incomplete and would not hold its dynamic, historic quality. For ultimately, every great historical idea embodies a special mission as well as a call for a new type of man. What is unique about the idea of the future is that it proposes to relieve the human condition by transcending it. It proclaims a higher destiny for Aryan man and summons him toward a full realization of his potential for physical, spiritual, and moral elevation, indeed, toward godhood, an undertaking so tragically stymied and stunted till now by the warped, deforming doctrines of an alien creed. Nevertheless, it is precisely the possibility for such upward evolution toward a godlike race in the Nietzschean sense, which assigns to the new idea its higher purpose and meaning, and gives to it its extraordinary revolutionary character. If we examine all of the ideological and spiritual trends of the past 100 years, as well as those of the present time, it becomes immediately apparent that there is but one idea which can conceivably qualify to serve as the formative principle of a post-Western, post-Christian world. The coming dispensation will not involve so-called alternatives, which are merely secularized outgrowths of the same underlying idea which is itself the cause of our present condition. And here, it must be emphasized that in the revolutionary convulsions which are coming, the neo-Semitic ideology of Karl Marx will have no more lasting significance than that of a cultural emetic. Whatever momentary power and success it enjoys is all ephemeral within a larger historical context, just as is that of all the gurus, fakirs, and exotic, new cults from out of the East in these latter days of the twilight of civilization. In the contemporary world, an idea or conception may be viewed as either reactionary, and therefore transitory, or as revolutionary and enduring. Everything which tends to perpetuate the old order is reactionary. Everything which continues to work within the framework of the past is reactionary. Everything which tends to foster decadence is reactionary. All falsehood, all hypocrisy, and opportunism are reactionary. As such, they are transitory and will not last. Only that which embraces hard reality and difficult truth will form part of something new and wonderful. Only it can truly be called revolutionary, for it will endure. It alone will furnish the spiritual foundation, the radiant nucleus of a new age. Today there is but one idea which may be regarded as the regenerating seed of a revolutionary new order, but one idea which can serve as a spiritual standard for post-Western man, but one idea which holds the key to the future. It is the magnificent and mighty idea of Adolf Hitler. The faith of Adolf Hitler. Beyond its purely intellectual aspect, the revolutionary idea of Adolf Hitler contains an added dimension to which one must turn to discover the source of its ineluctable attraction, its compelling magic, as it were. It is from its sentient, its emotional content that one must deduce the secret of its extraordinary mystique, just as it is here that one cannot help but perceive its nuclear potential as the mythos of a new age. For it is not by logic and reason that great earth-shaking movements are impelled, but by the unfathomable force of super-rational faith subjectively felt by the adherents of such a movement. In the arena of great world events, even the most rational of ideas must take on the character of subjective faith, or remain forever condemned to the realm of sterile abstraction. It must, in other words, proceed beyond the understanding of the mind to an appreciation of the heart. Only thus does it assume that mysterious and inexplicable quality which guarantees success. If we examine the various individual features of the National Socialist idea, its views on such fundamental concepts as race, personality, the state, work, struggle, and nature, for example, we find that these do not, even when taken together, suffice to explain the curious fascination surrounding its manifestation. For that, we must turn, ultimately, to the personality of its author. For in the person of Adolf Hitler, the idea undergoes fusion into a transcendent whole, which is greater than the sum of its parts. Only in a subjective appreciation of this phenomenon and what it represents does the idea become comprehensible. Who, then, was Adolf Hitler? What was he? Certainly he bore the attributes of any man. He had two natural parents. He had flesh and blood. He ate and slept. He grew up, went to school, and worked for a living. He formed friendships, had personal likes and dislikes, became angry, but also had a warm sense of humor. He experienced joy and sorrow, pleasure and pain. In other words, his were all the normal human experiences and emotions. He was, in fact, completely human. Historically, of course, Adolf Hitler was something more. He was a great national leader and statesman. Where can one find a comparable instance of a humble man of the people rising, by sheer will, determination, and genius in the face of every conceivable obstacle and odd, to leadership of a great nation, liberating it from alien domination, purging it of racial and moral decay, and building within it a regime of national unity and social justice? Where was there a similar statesman who, single-handedly, was able to halt the seemingly inexorable advance of communism across the face of a continent? Where else was there a leader who was able to lift his country, a country defeated in war and burdened with unbearable reparations, up out of economic and social misery and restore it to a position of prosperity, dignity, and pride, while other nations sickened in the throes of a Great Depression? Where in all of history was there ever a ruler who enjoyed greater popular support? Yet, It is beyond his manifest role as an outstanding national leader and statesman, as well as his obvious humanity, that we must look to discover the essential person of Adolf Hitler. Specifically, it is in the domain of the extra-historical, i.e., in that area outside the normal historical process, that we must turn to find the true identity of the figure who stood in our midst just a few short generations ago. For although his life's work continues to exercise an ongoing effect, its real meaning cannot be disclosed through the usual investigations of historiography. More than one observer has commented on a certain strange, compelling quality which seemed to emanate from the person of Adolf Hitler. Kubizek, for example, has described the remarkable incident on the Freienberg. Others have reported similar, if less dramatic, experiences in their own personal encounters with Hitler. And not only did this mysterious quality manifest itself in such individual meetings, but before larger audiences as well. Even persons who were not German and not National Socialist have testified to the singular ability of Adolf Hitler to articulate the unspoken feelings and aspirations of his listeners as though he were giving utterance to their innermost thoughts and emotions. Recalling a Hitler rally which she attended in 1930, one social democratic writer described the phenomenon in this way, quote, "The audience was breathlessly under his spell. This man expressed their thoughts, their feelings, their hopes. A new prophet had arisen. Many even saw in him another Christ." End quote. That he was able to affect his contemporaries in this manner is in itself remarkable. What is even more extraordinary and amazing, however, is the ability of Adolf Hitler to exert a continuing charismatic effect on generations which were not even born during his mortal lifetime. He still seems to articulate our deepest, most heartfelt feelings and longings as Aryans. He seems to strike a flawless chord with our innermost being. When he speaks, there is an imminent awareness that we are actually listening to the sound of our own inner voice. So perfect is his relation to our racial psyche that it is as though he has become one with it. We have the feeling that here before us is the consummate expression of the collective unconscious of our race. It is as though we are confronted by an awesome presence, by a timeless charisma. Indeed, there is a certain enigmatic aura surrounding the figure of Adolf Hitler, which seems to transcend all barriers of time and space. When we mention his name, we sense that we are speaking of more than a historical phenomenon. We allude to something which is eternal and infinite. We have the feeling that we are referring not only to the past, but to the present and future as well. Instinctively, we sense that here was more than just another man, that here was someone quite extraordinary. The truth is that in Adolf Hitler we are confronted by a phenomenon which defies all objective analysis and rational explanation. Indeed, it is one which can only be understood in its symbolic or representative role, that is, through mythic interpretation. For only in the realm of the mythos, of the epic, the saga, and legend, do we find those elements adequate to describe this most unusual personality. Only through a process of apotheosis can we hope to achieve a coherent understanding of the true reality of this remarkable figure. Only then do the various facets of his earthly life and career submit to plausible explanation. Accordingly, we may proceed to a recognition that this very unusual being did indeed bear a divine mandate. He was indeed the instrument of a higher destiny. He was indeed endowed by Providence with a special mission. And, indeed, he may be described as an incarnation of the Absolute, of that great ineffable force without beginning or end, which rules and dominates this universe and determines the destinies of men. Intuitively, we recognize that represented here is something elemental, something primal, something that goes back to the very foundation of the world, we perceive that this singular figure was, is, a manifestation of the will of the eternal in corpore. That he was, is, the voice of the Almighty, the Word, the Logos, spoken anew to modern man. That, indeed, he was, is, the herald of a new age here on earth. At the same time, we recognize him as the perfect personification of our racial soul. He is our consciousness and our conscience. In him is our racial will made manifest. In him do we see embodied the highest hopes and aspirations of Aryan man. And so, in paying homage to this extraordinary personality, we at the same time defer to our own soul and to the divine which lies within us. In imminent relationship with him and in the service of his cause, do our lives acquire purpose, meaning, value, relevance, direction, structure, significance. Without him, we have no worth. We are nothing. Nil. With him, we are privileged to become part of a larger order. Indeed, we possess the possibility of transcending the limitations of our own mortal existence. This, then, is the One whom we are honored to call Führer, Leader, our spiritual guide, special gift of Providence, the One chosen to disclose the divine will, the divine ordinances to the present age. Every human order contains an idea which is symbolic of its higher purpose and mission, and so it is, above all, as a symbol of a new age that the figure of Adolf Hitler must be seen. It may be stated that he represents the inner principle, the raison, of our entire racial existence, of our history, our destiny, our life. He stands as our eternal emblem before the world. He is our law and our guide as Aryans for all time to come. He is our hope, our redemption, our promise of victory. Thus do we perceive the outline of a new, imminent reality in which the transfigured person of Adolf Hitler joins with regenerate Aryan man and the absolute in mystic union to form the noble mythos of a new faith. Already, the rudiments of this faith, the Hitler faith, Hitlerism, exist in wordless, inchoate form in the hearts of a small but growing number. Slowly, almost imperceptibly, a sacred retinue is gathering in sworn bond of deathless loyalty and honor. Defiantly, its banner is raised. The prospect of battle stirs its blood. It hails the struggle, the awesome challenge. It awaits the coming storm. A new dispensation now looms on the horizon. A new, transforming reality is rising. As the darkness of a dying civilization casts its lengthening shadow over a confused and despairing world, the faith of the future will shine forth ever more brightly as the one great redeeming hope, the polar star of a new age and a resplendent new order, one which will be guided and instructed by the immortal personality of the greatest figure ever to walk the face of this earth.